This episode of the Mass Film Room podcast is currently unsponsored. If you are interested in sponsoring us, please reach out to us on our socials, on Twitter, or on Instagram, at Mavs Film Room. If you're here just to listen to the podcast, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to your podcast to never miss an episode. And if you're a Mavs fan who's online, be sure to follow us on Twitter, at Mavs Film Room, so you can interact with our great community of Mavs fans and never miss some of the great content that we put out. So thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy this episode. Go Mavs! What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Mavs Film Room podcast. I'm your host, Jay Apodji. I'm joined here with Vinay Chimity. We're coming to you after the Mavericks' 136-125 win against the Toronto Raptors on the second night of a back-to-back on the road. It came just 24 hours after an incredibly disappointing loss to the Cleveland Cavaliers, not because the Mavericks played badly, but because they lost on a 60-foot prayer by Max Strus at the buzzer. Just very unfortunate loss, very unlucky, but glad to be back in the win column tonight after two losses, one to Indiana to begin this road trip and then Cleveland last night. The Mavericks will play Boston on Friday, but we're here to break this game down as well as some of the other stuff we've seen. Vinay, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm worried about you. Are you good? Because Max Strus made you go black on Twitter.
Oh, man. I I'm not going to lie, man. It took me a few hours to get over that one. That was just a very painful loss. One of the most painful regular season losses I can imagine or I can remember. But glad we're back in the win column tonight.
It was pretty crazy loss. I will say that. It was. I don't know. Just crazy. But you know, the good thing about the NBA is not like the NFL where you have to wait a week to, you know, sulk in your misery. Like in this case, we got a back-to-back. So like they got to go right back out there the next day. So I think that was good for the team, good for the fan base. And now Max Strus is a distant memory.
Yeah. I mean, that's great
thing
about
the NBA season goes. Yeah,
exactly. And, you know, Mavs had a perfect scenario, extremely tough loss, and they had a chance to right the ship the next night. And they did. And look, Toronto is not, you know, Toronto's record obviously isn't the best, but you know, they've been playing well recently. They play hard every night. They're just coming off a three-game win streak. And it wasn't easy for the Mavericks, but credit to them taking control in the second half. What were your main takeaways from this game?
I mean, first off, like, I think this is a good win. Like, I'm not saying Toronto's a playoff team or anything like that, but they're going to be one of the more annoying teams for teams to face all year long just with how they play, their different defensive schemes. Jakob Poeltl is, like, a player today that I was just like, I've watched him before, and I was just kind of today I was more impressed than anything just with his little screen setting and getting guys open and little stuff that he does. I just feel like they're an annoying team to play, even if they don't win a lot of games the rest of the way. I think they're well-coached and just an annoying team. So playing them on a back-to-back in Toronto, like, I'm taking that as a dub. After last night, like, it was – I mean, we overuse this phrase must-win game all the time, but kind of a must-win game. Like, you don't want to lose today and go into Boston, and then you're just like – you know, there's not a lot of hope going into Boston. Like, now there's a little bit of hope, like you're going into enemy territory. Hey, I'll tell you what, Boston fans, like, I mean, a lot of these away crowds lately have been like loving Luka and Kyrie. That Boston crowd, hell no. Tatum Luka is a thing. Kyrie coming back to Boston's a thing. Like, that's a hostile like crowd. And I think like Luka especially, like, he loves that. Like, he's a crazy MF-er. Like, you know, he's a psycho. Like, that's the type of environment he thrives in. Like, we saw Phoenix a couple years ago. Like, that's just the type of stuff that gets him going. Now I'm getting excited for this game on Friday.
You know, Porzingis is also going to get up for that game too. So it's
absolutely
it's a huge game, national TV game. You know, I think, yeah, look, like there is hope going to this game for the Mavericks. I mean, obviously you're playing the best team on the road. It's a tough matchup, but you know, with Luka and Kyrie, I think you always have to feel good about your chances. You know, I think PJ Washington was kind of like the biggest story from this game for me. I mean, the Mavs made it a point to get him going early. He hit his first 2 3-pointers. He had 13 points in the first quarter. He finished with 23 points, 7 rebounds, had some, you know, big buckets there in the fourth quarter as well. What did you see out of PJ Washington tonight? And more importantly, is it something that he can replicate going forward?
I think I saw tonight what I've seen kind of even since he's been here. I think he's a confident shooter. He just hasn't gone in as much. And today he shot a couple trail threes, a couple of catch and shoot threes that, you know, defense wasn't really expecting him to shoot, because he's, I think on the scouting report probably says that he drives more often than he even just shoots it off a catch. So, I mean, because his main thing is to always just drive and attack the closeout defender, which I love that he does, because we haven't seen defensive role players in the past do that for the Mavericks. So, I love that he does that. I do think what he does is sustainable. I think the shot will go in more often than it has since he's been a Maverick. Like I said, I love his drives. His defense is like way better than I thought it was going to be before the trade happened. Like I didn't know that he was this good on defense. And I would have to look up Scotty Barnes' number, but he did a good job on Scotty Barnes. He's going to be probably on Jason Tatum on Friday. I don't even feel that scared about that. Like, I really don't. Like, I think he can hold his own.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Scotty Barnes tonight, not just 9 of 22 from the field, 19 points, 0 for 5 from 3. So yeah,
PJ, I mean, Scotty Barnes is an all-star. Yeah. Like, he's an all-star player.
And he's a good player. And he's only getting better. And he's one of the reasons why it's so frustrating to play Toronto. His length, his athleticism. I mean, to his credit, he almost had a triple-double tonight. 19 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. But that 9 of 22.
That's the type of player he is. He's going to impact all areas of the court anyway. Like, the scoring is what – he's their best scorer, you know. So PJ did his job. He put him in PJL.
PJL, yeah. I mean, PJ Washington has been – so impressive on defense, like you said, way better than I imagined, because, you know, I knew that he had some defensive potential, but my understanding of him in Charlotte was just that he was a bit of an overrated defender, one that didn't necessarily make kind of the impact that you would expect out of a player with his length. But so far he's lived up to that, you know, lived up to what we expected of him in Dallas. I mean, and tonight on offense, 5 of 10 on three, I think that's really what led him to have this scoring game. But even like you said, being able to attack closeouts, or even that little, like, you know, baby hook floater,
the little
that
floater
he has.
Yeah. I like it.
That's a great weapon.
I think, he works on it. Definitely. I think it's a good shot to have over, you know, the rim protectors in the league, and even shooting over smaller guys. Like, it's definitely a shot in his arsenal. So it's cool seeing, like, so-called role players have different shots in their bag.
Yeah.
We have role players with bags now.
We do. I mean, PJ Washington's off the dribble game is arguably his best weapon for us, and I think that's going to continue to get unlocked. And, you know, I think as far as his 3-point shooting today, I mean, obviously it's a make or miss league, but I did like that he was just, he didn't hesitate when he took his shots today. They were all in rhythm, and he didn't think about it. He just let it fly. It's not going to be the case every game, but I like that approach better than him thinking too hard about the three, and it being off.
I mean, you know how I am with basketball, dude. I love, like, defensive players. I think maybe more so than you do. Like, I mean, obviously doing stuff on offense is important, but I just love defensive versatility. And PJ Washington, this gets overthrown a lot, like being able to guard 1 through 5. I think the dude, like, legit might be able to guard 1 through 5. Like, maybe some centers. I mean, Jokic, no one can guard, but, you know, Embiid, no one can guard. But, like, 1 through 5, like, for the most part, like, normal players, 1 through 5, he can guard, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's got the foot speed. He's got the wingspan. I mean, you know, sometimes he's undersized when he gets matched up against some of these bigger post players. But, you know,
but he's strong even for his size. He's strong for his size.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, he's just been such a good defender. I mean, you know, and we saw that report from Shams Charania today that kind of, you know, echoed what you said when the trade went down, is that the Mavs think of PJ Washington as kind of their Aaron Gordon type player, which, I mean, is high praise because we've seen what Aaron Gordon can do for Denver.
Yeah, and, like, the differences between the two, like, if you were to ask me, I would think PJ Washington's a better shooter. Like, if they're in a gym shooting around, I would pick PJ Washington to win that shooting contest. Aaron Gordon's a better slasher. I mean, he's a ridiculous athlete. He's a better athlete. He's a better defender. That's cool. But, like, offensive, like, shooting game, like, next to Luka is arguably more important than next to Jokic. Like, I think next to Luka, you want maybe more of a shooter type. Next to Jokic, maybe you want more of a cutter type. Like, I think for PJ, he's just perfect for us. Like, the age frame and all that stuff. Like, I know the Mavericks did the whole thing with Grant Williams in the offseason. Didn't work out. I'm glad they didn't just be like, you know, Grant's here, we're going to stick with it. Like, they recognized the flaw. PJ was a little bit of a risk, and we don't know how it's going to turn out yet. I'm pretty optimistic on how it's going to turn out. Like, I think this is a type of player you need on championship teams. Like, that's the type of player he is. And that was worth whatever they gave up in the trade.
Yeah, I mean, his versatility, his ability to put the ball on the floor, I mean, it's exactly what they needed. It's what they thought they were getting in Grant Williams. Didn't end up happening. Obviously, you had to give up draft capital to get PJ Washington. But, I mean, it's whatever. He's here now. The results have shown. And I think hopefully this is a game that he can build on. Because, you know, Some of the reason why the Mavericks have not exactly been able to get over the hump these last two games, especially last night against Cleveland, is just, the lack of tertiary scoring. It's Luka and Kyrie playing really well, but outside of them, who has been the guy to step up? And it hadn't really been anyone. I mean, even against teams like Phoenix too, Luka and Kyrie just played so well that you didn't really need anyone else to be that scorer. Tonight, I think PJ Washington getting going early was great because you knew that Luka and Kyrie were going to show up tonight anyways.
Yeah, I think, I mean, when teams leave Luka and Kyrie one on one, like, I'm going to be honest, like, I don't want those guys passing the ball. I want them to attack. Like, that's how good they are at scoring. Like, really. And I think what I would like to see from the offense is more like just better schemes, I guess, and putting guys in better spots. But we just, I mean, it is what it is. We're just not getting a lot of offensive schemes from the whole Jason Kidd era. I'm not trying to, like, knock the guy, but you're just not getting that. Maybe it's more of a Luka thing, too, or like Luka just kind of like likes it like that. I don't know. But there doesn't seem to be like a lot of like easy answers for the offense. Like I feel like a lot of our buckets are going to be like difficult work for, and we have two of the guys that are just the best at getting their own buckets naturally. So the offensive numbers are going to be there, but I feel like there's just a little bit more of a, ceiling that there can be reached with just simple, I don't know. I'm not a X's and O's gut mastermind, but I feel like X's and O's aren't there offensively right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, as Grant Avsett told us, like when we had him on, like, Mavs offense is based a lot on read and react. So, I mean, I think it obviously relies on having the personnel to be able to execute that. And, with Luka and Kyrie, you have two of the best scorers, best shot makers in the game. I think PJ Washington is a good player in a read and react system just due to his,
Josh Green's
playmaking.
one of those. Derek Lively's one of those. I think Gafford, honestly, I've seen it like the last couple of games. I think he's even improved as like a read react player, like you're saying. Like he first game, I think we kind of remember when Gafford was kind of tunnel vision on those passes in the trap. And even in the few minutes he's gotten since then, since he hasn't really played a ton, I think he's even improved as a passer.
Yeah, and to your point again, also, I think like maybe some of the lack of like easy buckets that we see the Mavericks, or we don't see them always draw it up or drop offensive sets. I mean, one I think is just having Luka with the ball in his hands, like he's gonna do what he wants to. Another thing is like outside of Luka and Kyrie, the Mavs don't necessarily have a guy that can go, and get a bucket, and I think that's gonna be, one area in which PJ Washington can develop, and another area that the Mavs are going to need to prioritize in future off seasons. Don't want to get that far thinking ahead, but on that note, right? Dante Exum came back tonight, and you don't think of
Good
him
transition.
necessarily. Yeah, you don't think of him necessarily as a bucket getter, but just as another ball handler, a guy who's steady. We saw it. The Mavericks missed him basically for the entire calendar year of 2024. At this point, he's appeared in, I think, three games since the calendar flipped to 2024. So having him back today was huge, especially in the fourth quarter. Unlocking Kyrie as an off-ball scorer, I think, was huge. And that's going to pay dividends for the Mavs going forward if he can stay healthy.
Every time I've seen Dante Exum play this year, I'm like amazed that this guy was ever out of the league. Like he has such a good feel for the game. He knows how to play this year. I know he's improved his shooting. I think he went overseas to really work on his shooting. See the evidence in that this year. Like he's a confident shooter with us this year, which is important. Like if he couldn't shoot, he wouldn't be able to play as much as he could. And yeah, we saw the synergy with Luka and Kyrie and Dante today. Like it just opens so much up for Kyrie. Luka talks about this all the time, where when Kyrie's on the floor, it's so much easier for them, or so much easier for him. Just having another ball handler, someone that, takes attention away from the defense, or just someone that you can let handle the ball and you can kind of move off the ball a little bit. Like it does so much for you. And he just didn't really, Kyrie didn't really have that without Dante Exum, sitting on the bench and whatnot. You kind of relying too much on Tim Hardaway or Jaden Hardy even to be that guy when they're not really like secondary ball handler types. Those guys are better at catch and shoot, spot up situations than they are handling the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, Kyrie Irving has shouldered that burden, very well over the last, how many ever games it's been since he's returned from his thumb sprain. But, now allowing him to play off ball, I think is huge for the Mavericks because one, it allows them to, optimize him a little bit more. He doesn't have to work as hard for his buckets because, Dante Exum, he's talked about it too. He prides himself on being a downhill player. That's his mentality when he gets in the game. Dante Exum, even if he's not the greatest finisher in the world, just getting downhill and being able to react quickly on those drives, getting the ball to Kyrie Irving. We know how fast Kyrie Irving is, with a quick first step. He's a tough shot maker. He can score at all three levels. I mean, I think that's a formula that maybe the Mavs can follow in these third quarters or fourth quarters,
And when
sorry.
Kyrie plays off the ball with whether it's Luka or Exum, like he's able to get into a triple threat position where he just has more options. Like, you know, when you don't have a live dribble, you're just catching it with no dribble. Like you can pass it, shoot it, or what's the other one? Dribble it. So like when you're out of that position, you're Kyrie Irving, you're able to do all those things. Like it's just so dangerous. That's why he likes to do it. I think Mavs fans are starting to realize like he likes to play off ball. Like that's just what he did this in Cleveland, he did this in Brooklyn. Like that's just how he is. He's a natural hooper. He goes with the flow. That's what I always will harp on this. Like people don't give it enough credit for how seamless he is or how seamless it is that he fits just alongside Luka like that.
Yeah, I mean, their fit looks as good as it's ever been. There's a lot more synergy now. And I think, like, you know, the Mavs aren't losing the non-Luka minutes like they used to in the past because they have Kyrie Irving and because they have a lot more, you know, reinforcements. I mean, even Daniel Gafford, I mean, he's the guy we didn't even talk about today. He was a plus 11 in this game, 13 points, four rebounds. I thought, you know, he had a couple of quiet games. You know, Indiana and Cleveland didn't get to make his impact as much, but tonight, you know, his minutes were very valuable. And yeah, you
A
know,
lot
the
of that had to
live.
do with playing time. He didn't really got to play a lot the last two games, partly because, you know, Lively and Gafford were kind of struggling getting up to shooters on the Pacers and the Cavs the last couple of games. So, you know, Jason Kidd, I think rightfully went to Maxi Kleber. I think I would like to see Jason Kidd kind of die with the size a little bit more against those type of teams. I do understand giving up the shots, but I just think Lively and Gafford, when they're in the game at the five, man, it just gives you such a different dynamic on both ends of the floor. Like Luka and Kyrie, I think are better drivers when someone's like, I don't know, taking away the big. I get the five out spacing also helps them out, but I don't know, different dynamics. Defensively, like, yeah, teams will maybe get some open jump shots, but they're not scoring at the rim as easily on those guys. So it's kind of a pros and cons thing that Jason Kidd's going to have to deal with the rest of the year because we don't have like a superstar center. Like, it's going to be different guys closing in a lot of these games. It's going to be Maxey one night, might be Lively one night, might be Gafford one night. Like, who knows? Maybe PJ one night. We haven't really seen a lot of small ball five for PJ, but maybe that's something Jason Kidd will want to go to.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of the PJ and Maxi combinations, but you know, I think that's a good transition to talk about the defense because I think that's been one of the biggest issues here on that two-game losing streak, as well as really in the first half of this game too, just giving up too many open shots. You know, and obviously every team now is really good at shooting. but look, like Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively combined for 9 blocks tonight. Daniel Gafford had 4, Derek Lively had 5. I do feel like the defensive scheme when they're in the game is a little bit too conservative for them. I mean, we've seen examples of, you know, Daniel Gafford being able to defend at the level of the screen. If you go and look at the tape from that Phoenix game last week, Derek Lively, I think, is more switchable than he gets credit for as a 7-footer. I do feel like you can play a little bit more aggressively with those two guys on the floor. And hopefully, you know, tonight was a good exercise in learning how to play defense without relying on the switchability of Maxi Kleber to bail you out, because it does seem like they've been relying on that a little bit too heavily these last few games.
Yeah, I think those two guys. I don't know if Lively will get there in space this year. We'll see. But in terms of, they just have to get higher up on the screen if they're going to be out there. Like those teams are going to shoot off the screen like that. Like especially those good playoff teams. Like they have superstar guards, not superstar guards, but it's just all-star guards, all-star creators. Like they're going to attack that. So I understand why Jason Kidd went to Maxi to close the games, but you know they have to be able to, I think, play those guys more, and they can't just rely on Maxi. Like the guy's gonna burn out if they have to keep doing that.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we saw Daniel Gafford close this game tonight. I thought he was pretty good. And obviously the Mavs were, you know, controlling the game, so he was in a favorable situation. But I do want to see them try this out a little bit more, not rely so heavily on Maxi. I mean, there's obviously an appeal with him, but you have Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively for a reason. You spend considerable draft capital getting them for a reason. I think it's in your best interest to optimize their fit, figure out how to keep them on the floor. And, you know, I think this would be less of a, you know, maybe less of a conundrum if the Mavs had a little bit better defense on the perimeter. I mean, Tim Hardaway Jr. obviously is not a perimeter defender. I think Josh Green could be, but his screen navigation leaves a lot to be desired, as we saw, you know, Emmanuel quickly get a lot of open 3-point looks tonight. That's something that needs to be improved. Derek Jones Jr., I wish he was better on offense because he is probably the answer to that problem. He was a plus 16 in this game, a team high, a game high, that is actually a plus 16, you know, but unfortunately, like, teams just don't respect his jump shot on offense, which is going to make it tough for him to stay on the floor in the playoffs.
Yeah, if teams aren't doing it in the regular season, they're definitely not going to do it in the playoffs. Like, he's going to get all the open threes he wants. Doesn't matter if I'm bringing the ball up. Doesn't matter if Luka's bringing the ball up. Like, teams are going to leave him open. So that's going to be the issue with him. But I do agree with you. I think he is our best, like, point of attack defender in terms of being able to guard the ball handler on a screen, navigating the screen. I love his length out there. Like, I love seeing, just a side note, all these Dallas Mavericks with the wingspan nowadays. Even Luka has an underrated wingspan. But, like, PJ, Exum, Jones, list goes on and on. Just like having that length out there is an awesome thing to see.
Yeah, I mean it certainly is a stark contrast to the Mavericks from, you know, before the trade deadline that was, you know, consistently playing undersized. They'd get bullied by teams like Toronto. Tonight, I didn't feel like Toronto bullied them. I mean, yes, I think teams still do have a length advantage on the Mavericks certain times, and obviously Toronto is built with a lot of long players, but it didn't feel like the Mavs were overwhelmed by their length tonight. So I think that speaks to just the
No.
size upgrades that they've made. You know, the
I
deadline.
gotta talk about Derek Lively though, real quick. I mean,
Yeah,
I know
go.
that ironically, last couple of games he's been pulled a little bit because he, just for defensive reasons, for not guarding the shooter or whatnot. But man, some of the highlights in the last three games, this game, last two games against Cleveland and Indiana, like, just defensive player of the year type ability that we've seen from him protecting the rim. Like, it's legitimately been that good. I cannot believe
I
how good
know.
he is on defense.
Dude, it's been crazy. I mean, he's played like, you know, an all-star in terms of like his rim protecting ability. I mean, you know, I say that because like he literally legitimately plays like one of the best rim protectors in the league. Yesterday against Cleveland, he was incredible. And even tonight against Toronto, it felt like every time Toronto got in the lane, he would erase their shot. It's crazy how good he is at protecting the rim.
Like, I'm trying to think, Rudy Gobert, I want to say, was like playing a lot in G League his rookie year. Wasn't like a regular player until his second or third year in the NBA. Like, Derek Lively is a 20-year-old. It's just like the sky's the limit for the kid. Like, this is the worst he's supposed to be in his NBA
Yeah.
career. I don't know what he's going to add offensively, but even just the defensive stuff, like, if Victor wasn't a thing in San Antonio, like, he would have a Defensive Player of the Year trophy in his near future. Like, that's how good I think Derek Lively can be.
And he'd probably have a all rookie first team appearance in his future. I do think he's gonna make the second team. He has to. But yeah, he's been incredible since returning from his injury. I mean, I know his minutes have been kind of down, you know, these last few games, but when he's on the floor, I mean, he's super impactful for them. And yeah, I
There's
mean,
more
just,
defensive
yeah.
schemes that they can do, just to side note, just like to avoid him. I mean, I just feel like it's worth having him out there. Like, I know he has issues guarding in space, but man, you got to do something on defense to scheme it up to where you could, these he has to stay on the floor
I
somehow. Like, he's
agree.
just
I
so good
agree.
defensively. Got to do something, man. And that's why coaches are paid. Like, figure out a way to get his ass and keep him on the floor.
I know, I know. I mean, like, if you have Gafford or Lively on the floor, like, your defense is going to be good. If you can figure out how to navigate the ball screens properly, I guarantee you that you're going to have a good defense
But the
because.
issue with that is the defense should be good with those two. But the last couple of games, like, I that's the thing. I understand why Jason Kidd went to Maxey, but I just feel like, and I'm not a defensive X's and O's guy either. Neither am I an offensive X's and O's guy. Neither of the two. But I'm just saying, there's got to be some sort of defensive scheme, man, where we can, like it can't just be just switch with Maxey 1 through 5 and Derek Lively and Gafford can only play drop. Like, there's got to be something.
Maybe having Exum will help solve that problem a bit,
Maybe
just as like
switch. You can
a better perimeter defender.
double the ball handler when they get Lively or Gafford on them and rotate off of that. I don't know, something. But it doesn't have to just be they sit and drop and let these guys shoot. Like, come on, let's compromise a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, I think what other teams have been doing these last few games has been, you know, attacking the Mavericks' weak links on defense, whether it's Luka, whether it's Kyrie, whether it's Tim Hardaway. They're seeking out a lot of mismatches in the post, especially we saw that today. The Raptors repeatedly attacked Tim Hardaway in the post. They often tried to get, you know, small switched onto the post player as well, like Josh Green, or even Kyrie Irving. So that's something that's going to have to be figured out. But again, I think you can live with that. Like, okay, if you get those mismatches in the post, that's fine. Just don't give up open threes. And when you're not giving up open threes, when you have one of the two best rim protectors in the league, like, yes, I'm saying Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively are two of the best rim protectors in the league. I think that's a good position to be in. You know, keeping them off the floor, I think, is a tough decision to make. And hopefully the Mavs can figure out how to keep them on the floor more. Because against Cleveland, Daniel Gafford played 6 minutes. That can't happen in the playoffs. You need him on the floor more than that.
For anyone that disagrees with Jay saying they're two of the best rim protectors in the league, Daniel Gafford is top five in the NBA in total blocks over the last 5 years, and then he's not even the best shot blocker on the team. Derek Lively is. So what Jay's saying is absolutely true. They are two of the best rim protectors in the NBA. Like, it's just crazy to say from what we've had in past years, but it's true.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, neither of them are going to make an all-star team next year or maybe even the year after that. I don't want to put a ceiling on Derek Lively, but, you know, just their impact at the rim is crazy. I mean, we saw it tonight, and we saw it even before Derek Lively came back in the first few games after the trade deadline. We saw how, you know, impactful Daniel Gafford is. So, you know, I want to see them on the floor more. I mean, Derek Lively had 23 minutes tonight, Daniel Gafford at 24. I thought it was good. I mean, look, like the defense wasn't perfect tonight by any stretch, and it didn't look pretty for a lot of this game, but I think it was a necessary step for the Mavericks to learn how to play without Maxi Kleber because, you know, yes, having Maxi on the floor does give you a five out lineup, but you know, how many threes is Maxi taking in 2024? It's still something that, you know, is more of an idea than something that happens in practice. And don't get me wrong, Maxi's been amazing, especially on defense since coming back from injury. But I just like the Mavericks to be able to diversify the types of looks that they put on the floor.
Yep, I know. I agree with you. I think we're gonna see some PJ at the five looks in the coming. I don't know, maybe not that much, but I think we're gonna have to see it because I think Jason Kidd's gonna want to have it as a tool in the playoffs. And like right now, Maxey can't be the only small ball five on the team. Like, who else is gonna play small ball five? And I think it's PJ.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, PJ Washington is absolutely a player capable of playing small ball five, at least for short stretches of the game. So, if I mean, if they can do that, I think it'll unlock a lot for them defensively. And, you know, yes, these last three games have not been the best defensive games for the Mavericks, but we've seen them be able to turn it on defensively, especially like we saw them in the third quarter today. It was a 40-25 advantage for the Mavs in the third quarter. I got to look at the fourth quarter to see what the box score was. I mean, the Raptors scored 33 in the fourth quarter. The Mavs scored 30. but look, second night of a back-to-back, I'm not going to complain too much about defense or style points because I don't think there's ever such a thing as a bad win on the second night of a back-to-back. It's win by any means necessary, and the Mavs did that tonight.
No, absolutely. And Friday's gonna be crazy, I think. Well, I can't wait. I can't wait because I think we can compete with those boys. I'm not saying we're gonna beat them, but I think it's gonna be a good game.
Yeah, it'll be a good game. I mean, you know, I'm praying that the Mavs can come out of this so that they can finish the road trip 2-2.
You can make such a statement to the NBA if you beat them Friday, because everyone in NBA media wants to crown them champions anytime they can. So if you can
Half
beat those guys,
the people who cover the league nationally are from Boston anyway, so you know they love them to begin with.
yeah. So, you know, let's see what the KP is now one of the best contracts in sports, apparently. So, you know, I don't know how we're going to beat that super team, but we're going to give it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, look, Boston is a great team, and even though Jason Tatum is not, you know, doesn't have to do the heavy lifting every night, I mean, they're just so well-rounded 1 through 5. So it'll be a great challenge for the Mavericks, but hey, who
I
knows?
don't, I mean, I could like do a whole hour podcast on that game. Like, is Luka gonna hunt Derek White and Drew, or is he gonna hunt his old teammate KP? Like, I don't know how that's gonna go. I think I mean, we know how Luka is. He likes to go after those centers. So, you know, I think that whole little rivalry, whatever. I don't think they have a rivalry, but you know what I'm saying. Like, I think they're gonna see each other a lot on Friday.
Yeah, I mean, Derek Lively versus Kristaps Porzingis, how do they address that matchup? That's going to be an interesting thing as well. So we'll see.
Jason Kidd can counter KP off the floor going five out, and you're probably going to see it. I guarantee you see it Friday with PJ Maxey at the 4-5, and KP is going to be out there guarding. We'll see how the big fella does.
Absolutely. It's going to be an exciting game. Hey, I'm not going to expect a win, but if they could do that, it would be amazing. But yeah, I don't know. That's all I got on these last few games. Vinay, you have anything else?
No, that's it. See how Friday goes. The
Yeah,
NBA
please.
season is a marathon. Each game can suck, and each game can feel amazing. I feel good right now. I don't feel amazing. I feel good right now. If we beat the Celtics on Friday, I will feel beyond amazing.
that would be the win of the season if they were able to do that. But tonight, Mavericks back in the win column after two straight losses. They got some help from the Indiana Pacers tonight after the team that beat them a few nights ago. Indiana beat New Orleans 123 to 114. That was a good one for the Mavericks. And right now, the Nuggets are up on the Kings 71 to 57 in the third quarter. So hopefully they can hold on to there because we do need Sacramento to lose. But yeah, thanks, Vinay, as always, for joining me on this episode. Thanks. Go ahead.
I was going to say, of course, the Celtics have, they played on Tuesday and they have a couple of days of rest before they play us. Like, I just, of course, how that's how the scheduling goes.
Yeah, it is the third game in 4 nights for the Mavs, unfortunately. But hey, no one feels sorry for you in the NBA. So, you could look at it like that, or you could look at the Mavericks are in rhythm. And look, the Mavericks showed on Tuesday night last night that they could go toe to toe with one of the best teams in the league, that they could beat one of the best teams in the league. It just didn't happen for them, due to divine intervention. But so I think that was encouraging. I'm never one for moral victories, but I think that's the takeaway you have to take from that Cavaliers game. And hopefully, the Mavs can do something similar against Boston on Friday.
They can't get embarrassed Friday. Like, don't do that. Don't piss me off. Do not get embarrassed Friday. That'll piss me off. Like, keep it competitive. Y'all, Luka, you're the best MF-er on the court. No one on the court is on your level. Like, I want to see that type of performance from Luka. Yeah, I mean, he probably will deliver on that. Like, he is the best player on the floor. He doesn't need to prove it, but like, I want to see like a performance that kind of like just dictates that. Like, Celtics fans think a little too much about Jason Tatum in comparison. Like, come on, there's levels to this. Like, I want to see that type of thing from Luka Friday.
Don't get blown out. I think that's the key. Look,
Oh
he's
man,
very
that's a horrible motivational
no,
message. We're
well,
gonna
no,
beat
like
those
that.
guys.
Yeah, we're no.
We're gonna
Let's
beat them
win the
Friday.
game. Let's win the game. That's the goal. But like you said, keep it competitive. I mean, look, the Mavericks got blown out against Indiana on Sunday. It was looking like a blowout in the first half against Cleveland. Luckily, Luka went on an insane run to, bring the Mavericks back. So you don't want to get down against the Celtics because if that happens, then you're not going to win. They're not going to let you get back into the game. So that's got to be the key, is come out with aggression in the first half and, win the game by any means necessary. So
It's going to be annoying. Now, I mean, they're one of the rare teams that they have like multiple perimeter defenders. I think Drew's going to be on Kyrie. And I want to see Kyrie be mad at Drew for taking his Team USA spot. That's what
I
I want
mean,
to
there
see.
is one more spot on Team USA, but it's, with Jalen Brunson. And I'm
You
sure
know how the
Luka.
Nike politics go, bro. Kyrie's not getting that
Yeah,
spot.
absolutely. I mean, Nike does have a huge, huge
All right,
hand in Team
we
USA.
should end the podcast before we get shut down.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. We've gone on for some time now, but great insight as always, Vinay. Thanks everyone for listening. Be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, on Instagram at Mavs Film Room. We'll be back probably this weekend with another episode. So be sure to, keep it locked in here. Go Mavs. We'll see you soon.